Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, to ask a question, press star one on your phone and record your name at the prompt. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Kathy Harbin. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Alyssa, and welcome to this briefing on CDC's interim travel guidance for Zika virus. We apologize for the scheduling problems today. This is a rapidly evolving investigation with new information coming in all the time. We're doing our best to get you all of the information we can confirm. Our speakers tonight are Dr. Lyle Peterson, and that's spelled P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N. He is director of CDC's Division of Vector-Borne Diseases. We also have Dr. Cynthia Moore, and that's Moore, M-O-O-R-E. She is director of CDC's Division of Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. Dr. Peterson will first give remarks, and then both Dr. Peterson and Dr. Moore will be available for questions. Dr. Peterson.
Yes, thank you, and good evening, and thank you for waiting until the evening for this announcement. So my name is Dr. Lyle Peterson, and I am the director of CDC's Division of Vector-Borne Diseases in Fort Collins, Colorado. Today, I will be providing a review of laboratory tests CDC recently performed on several samples received from Brazil from individuals infected with the Zika virus. I will also be sharing CDC's interim travel guidance for the 14 countries and territories in Central and South America and the Caribbean where Zika virus transmission is ongoing. Brazil, Colombia, El Salvador, French Guiana, Guatemala, Haiti, Honduras, Martinique, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Suriname, Venezuela, and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. This number will increase. I'll close by providing an outlook of what Zika virus transmission may look like in the U.S. and moving forward. Zika virus is spread to people through mosquito bites. About 1 in 5 people infected with Zika virus will develop the most common symptoms of Zika, including fever, rash, joint pain, and conjunctivitis, or red eyes. The illness is usually mild, with symptoms lasting from several days to a week. Severe disease requiring hospitalization is uncommon. Outbreaks of Zika have occurred in areas of Africa, Southeast Asia, the Pacific Islands, and the Americas. Because the Aedes species mosquitoes that spread Zika virus are found in many locations throughout the world, it is likely that outbreaks will spread to new countries. As many of you know, Brazil has been combating a large outbreak of Zika since last year. In addition, officials there have noted a rather significant increase in cases of microcephaly, which means smaller than expected head size, in infants. And many are pointing to an association between microcephaly and Zika virus infection. According to Brazilian health authorities, more than 3,500 microcephaly cases were reported in Brazil between October 2015 and January 2016. Earlier this week, CDC released results from laboratory testing that represent the strongest scientific evidence to date supporting an association between Zika virus infection and microcephaly and other poor pregnancy outcomes. Although these test results provide new evidence of a link between Zika virus infection and microcephaly and poor pregnancy outcomes, we don't yet know what other outcomes that might be associated with infection during pregnancy and other factors that might increase risk to the fetus. More laboratory testing and other studies are planned to learn more about the risks of Zika virus infection during pregnancy. CDC scientists tested samples from 2 pregnancies that ended in miscarriage and from 2 infants with diagnosed microcephaly who died shortly after birth. They determined that all four cases were positive for Zika virus infection, indicating that the babies had become infected during pregnancy. For the two full-term infants, tests showed that Zika virus was present in the brain. Genetic sequence analysis showed that the virus in the four cases was the same as the Zika virus strain currently circulating in Brazil. All four mothers reported having experienced a fever and rash illness consistent with Zika virus disease during their pregnancies. This new information has led CDC to issue interim travel guidance for countries where Zika virus is ongoing. Until more is known, CDC recommends the following for pregnant women and women of childbearing age. Pregnant women in any trimester should consider postponing travel to the areas where Zika virus transmission is ongoing. Pregnant women who must travel to one of these areas should talk to their doctor first and strictly follow steps to avoid mosquito bites during their trip. Women of childbearing age who are thinking about becoming pregnant should consult with their healthcare provider before traveling to these areas and strictly follow steps to prevent mosquito bites during the trip. In addition, CDC recommends that everyone traveling to areas where Zika virus transmission is ongoing also take precautions to protect themselves from mosquito bites to reduce their risk of infection with Zika virus and other mosquito-borne viruses, such as dengue and chikungunya. These steps include wearing mosquito repellent, using air conditioning or window and door screens to keep mosquitoes outside, wearing long pants and long sleeve shirts when possible, and emptying standing water inside and outside the home. Because specific areas where Zika virus transmission is ongoing are difficult to determine and likely to change over time, CDC will update this travel guidance as more information becomes available. Check the CDC travel website frequently for the most up-to-date recommendations. Let me close by providing an outlook of what Zika virus transmission might look like in the U.S. moving forward. CDC continues to work with states to monitor for mosquito-borne diseases, including Zika. The first travel-associated Zika virus disease case among U.S. travelers was reported in 2007. And from 2007 to 2014, a total of 14 returning U.S. travelers had positive Zika virus testing performed at CDC. In 2015 and 2016, at least 8 U.S. travelers have had positive Zika virus testing performed at CDC. However, CDC is still receiving samples for Zika virus testing from returning U.S. travelers who became ill in 2015 or 2016. We are not able to predict how much Zika virus will spread in the United States. Many areas of the United States have mosquitoes that can become infected with and transmit Zika virus. However, recent chikungunya and dengue outbreaks in the United States suggest that Zika outbreaks in the U.S. mainland may be relatively small and focal. In the U.S., other mosquito spread infections like malaria and dengue used to be widespread. However, better housing construction, regular use of air conditioning, use of window screens and door screens, and state and local mosquito control efforts help to eliminate these ongoing outbreaks from the mainland. Because of this uncertainty, however, it is important that we maintain and improve our ability to identify and test for Zika and other mosquito-borne diseases. Finally, I'd like to reiterate the importance of taking precautions to avoid mosquito bites if you are traveling to an area where Zika virus transmission is ongoing. You can find information about these areas as well as more information about Zika on the CDC Zika website. Thank you, and we'll be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson. Operator, we are now ready to open up the line for questions.
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone phone, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. It will take a moment for questions to come through. Please stand by. And our first question comes from Richard Besser. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for taking the question. My question has to do with areas of ongoing transmission. You mentioned the 14 countries. Do the recommendations apply to the entire country or just regions within those countries where there's been transmission? And secondly, what about Americans who are residents of Puerto Rico? What do you recommend for them?
Right. What we're recommending right now, given the uncertainty of exactly where Zika virus infection is ongoing in any given country, at the present time, the recommendations would follow at least in most countries for most of the country, unless there's specific evidence that Zika virus may not be occurring in certain areas. Again, this is an evolving situation, and we expect this guidance to change in the near future. As far as residents of Puerto Rico, which would also include U.S. Virgin Islands, where dengue and Zika are likely, or dengue is endemic and Zika virus is likely to become epidemic in the future, what we would recommend is the usual recommendations we would take for dengue virus infection. In other words, trying to get rid of mosquitoes around the house by emptying or getting rid of mosquito breeding sites and wearing a mosquito repellent in particular. But in particular, for pregnant women, we would expect or hope that these recommendations would be strictly followed.
Our next question comes from Robert Lowe's with Medscape Medical News. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. For pregnant women who are bitten by the mosquito and contract the virus, what's the risk in terms of having a baby with this microcephaly?
Microcephaly.
Right. Can you quantify the risk in terms of like 20% risk, 100% risk?
We cannot quantify the risk at this time. We have investigations planned in Brazil in conjunction with the Brazilian health authorities to help answer these kinds of questions.
Our next question comes from Marcelo Nino with Brazilian Media. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. My question is regarding the cases that were examined. I wanted to ask if all the cases were from Brazil. And the second question is due to the number of cases in Brazil, would you say that Brazil is particularly risky for pregnant women to travel among all these 14 countries? Thank you.
Yeah, I think, first of all the cases, these four cases that I mentioned were all from Brazil. As far as Brazil being particularly risky, I think this is really, at this point, becoming a very regional problem. And I certainly wouldn't want to focus on Brazil, but pay attention to all of the countries in the region where we know virus transmission is ongoing. So it's really impossible to say at this point in time whether Brazil is more or less risky from all, as opposed to other countries in the region. And I think that's why it's really important for people traveling to the region to take these recommendations quite seriously.
Our next question comes from Mike Stilby with Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. A couple things, actually. First, I just wanted to clarify, Dr. Peterson, did you say that there were 14 cases between 2007 and 2014 and then at least 8 from 15 to 16? I thought the number was 12, but I just wanted to make sure. Also, could you say why do you think we haven't seen this problem, or have we seen this problem in other countries in earlier years in women who were infected with Zika virus?
Yeah, I think As far as the why haven't we seen this problem before, the major outbreaks that have occurred so far, have been in mainly in islands in the Pacific, and many of these islands have quite small populations. For example, the first outbreak that occurred was in 2007 on the island of Yap in Micronesia, which only has a population of about 5,000. So uncommon kinds of outcomes may not have been noticed simply because there weren't that many of them. What was noted, however, in French Polynesia, where an outbreak occurred which involved more than 30,000 persons, retrospectively, after the Brazilian data became available, they went back and looked and saw an increase in microcephaly cases in their area. None of these have been confirmed to my knowledge, but there was an increase in microcephaly. So, you know, that provides some evidence that this may be occurring in other areas as well.
Our next question comes from Evan Brown with Fox News. Your line is open.
Thank you very much for doing this. You know, I want to commend CDC for throwing this together. I know that normally you guys are very organized, and this looked like you guys sort of rushed to put this together for us in the media. Is there a degree of urgency among your colleagues and yourself regarding this? You know, you had a earlier today you gave us a pretty short notice, and then you gave us very short notice for this one. Why not wait till Monday for a press call? You know, I'm curious about that. Second question, can you talk a little bit more about what microcephaly is? You mentioned a reduced head size in infant, but exactly how small are we talking, and what are the what's the prognosis for an infant with that?
Right. I will answer your first question, then I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Cynthia Moore for your second question. And your first question, I believe, was, well, why not wait till Monday? The reason is that we believe this is a fairly serious problem. The infection is, or the virus is spreading fairly rapidly throughout the Americas. We know in populations that it does affect a large percentage of the population may become infected. And because of this growing risk of, or growing evidence that there's a link between Zika virus and microcephaly, which is a very severe and devastating outcome, that we thought it was very important to warn people as soon as possible. As far as your second question, I will turn it over to Dr. Cynthia Moore.
Thank you. When a baby is born, one of the first things that's done is measurements. And we're all familiar with birth weight and birth length, but may not know that a newborn baby's head size is also measured. So microcephaly is a condition where a baby has a smaller than expected head when compared to other babies of the same age and sex. Unfortunately, this condition often means that the baby's brain is also smaller and might not have developed properly. When microcephaly is severe, babies can also have other symptoms such as seizures, vision problems, and developmental disabilities. These symptoms can have varying degrees of severity, and in some cases can be life-threatening and last for the child's lifetime. It's somewhat difficult to predict the consequences of microcephaly at the time of a baby's birth. Therefore, close follow-up is needed through regular checkups to monitor and evaluate these affected babies. We have more information about microcephaly on our website and invite you to look at that material. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Donald McNeil with the New York Times. Your line is open.
Can you explain exactly what the delay was all day? Is there some pressure on you to have issued this or to not issue this? And where did that pressure come from?
Don, this is Kathy Harbin in CDC's Office of the Associate Director for Communication. As we said earlier, we were pulling together quite a bit of information and trying to get it all ready to go at the same time. So we have a media statement. We've also posted our travel notices now. As we said earlier, we are getting sample frequently, so there was additional information that we were trying to decide if we, this is something we needed to share as well. So we have pulled together what we have. You now have the travel notices. As Dr. Peterson said, we are expecting that we're going to get more reports from more countries, and we did not want to wait until next week to share the information that we have now.
Our next question comes from Susan Wagner with NBC News. Your line is open.
Thank you. I have two questions. The travel advisory is applying to women in all trimesters. Is there a trimester where women are more vulnerable to Zika virus? That's my first question. And secondly, I'd like to know about mosquito spraying in the U.S. Are you going to be recommending more mosquito spraying in vulnerable areas in the U.S.?
Yes. We do not know exactly what is the biggest period of risk during a woman's pregnancy. That's one of the things we want to find out. And maybe after I'm done, perhaps Dr. Moore can provide a little bit more insight about that. But as far as the mosquito spraying goes, many areas of the United States have very good mosquito control programs. Other areas do not. So we're not going to necessarily recommend more mosquito spraying that's already going on. But the important thing is that we're going to be ramping up surveillance for this across the United States. And in the event that cases start to occur, certainly we'll hit those areas very hard. There's just no way to spray the entire area of the United States prophylactically to try and prevent this from happening. But when cases do occur, we'll definitely work with state and local health departments and local mosquito control districts to jump on this and try and control it as best we can. Dr. Moore?
Sure. So what we are seeing in the babies is a destruction of brain tissue that was already formed, a brain that was already forming. And so that can happen in the first trimester. It can also happen in the second trimester. I believe that the information we have now from moms in Brazil is that most of the exposure was in the first trimester. Most of the Zika virus infection was in the first trimester, but we do have some evidence that it also the risk can continue into the second trimester.
Our next question comes from Carrie Sheridan with AFP. Your line is open.
Oh, thanks for taking my question. When you talk about there are more than 3,500 cases in Brazil of microcephaly in this one-year period, less than a year, can you describe how different that is from a normal period?
Dr. Moore, maybe you want to take that question?
Sure. I think, unfortunately, microcephaly, which itself is a condition but is not a diagnosis, it's very difficult to get exact numbers in populations, even in the United States. We do see this as an increase. It's very hard to say how much of an increase it is. We're also seeing babies who have severe microcephaly much more than we would expect, but we're hoping another area of our research or inquiry is trying to figure out exactly how much the risk for women is increased, and and be able to describe it a little better in the population.
Our next question comes from Betsy McKay with the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I have a question for Dr. Moore, which is, I'm wondering about other associations or causes of microcephaly. Have you ever seen anything like this? In other words, a link between any other virus and microcephaly? And otherwise, you know, what are the main causes associated with it?
Well, there are many causes of microcephaly. Some are genetic causes, some are other environmental causes, such as alcohol exposure during pregnancy. And there are other infectious causes of microcephaly. Several viruses can give you pretty much the same picture as we're seeing now with the babies that have been exposed to Zika virus. So just saying microcephaly or even severe microcephaly doesn't always point you to the cause of the problem.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. Our next question comes from Dan Childs with ABC News. Your line is open.
Thank you very much for taking my question. You know, knowing what we know about Zika right now, do we have any sense as to what it would take for the travel warning to go away, and how long into the future might this be, specifically considering that, you know, we're going to be looking at Olympic Games in Rio in a matter of months? When might the situation be better?
Yeah, I don't think we can speculate on this. This is a new situation. It is a dynamic situation, and I think we're just going to have to wait to see how this all plays out. These viruses certainly can spread in populations for some time, but again, you know, this is new. It's a dynamic and changing situation, and I think it's really impossible for us to speculate what may happen in 3 or 4 or even next month, for that matter.
Our next question comes from Mike Stobie. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking me again. I just wanted to go back to that original question about the numbers and make sure it was 8 and not 12. And also, could you say what entities had input on the CDC guidance? Was there discussions with the countries that would be affected, Olympic officials, people at other federal agencies, who had input, and did any of that input influence the form that this this alert came?
Yeah, could you repeat? Sorry, could you repeat your question? I was just trying to verify the numbers here.
Sure. I was wondering who CDC talked to in preparation of this alert. Were the countries that were named in this alert, was it discussed with them? Did you talk to Olympic officials? Were there people at other federal agencies, and what input did they have, and did any of that input change the final product decision to make an alert, not a warning, or anything else?
Yeah, if Dr. Marty Cifron from our Division of Global Migration and Quarantine is on the line, I think he could best answer your question.
Sure. Thanks very much. You know, as is common with all issuance of travel, you know, travel advisories, whether it's our routine precautions, our special precautions at level 2, which this is, or advice, you know, not to go to restrict travel, we do diligence by having consultations with impacted countries, public health authorities. We don't like to blindside partners. We like to engage and give advance notice. And given the large number of potential countries here in the region, those consultations are very important and very key, including partners with Pan American Health Organization and WHO. It's not so much that it changes the recommendation or the nature of, or the importance of the message, but I think it's a really good practice not to surprise or, you know, put people hearing about it for the first time in the media. And this is a routine practice that we do with all of our travel advice, and it is part of the reasons that, you know, completing those consultations in a timely way and getting getting that back and forth is part of the reasons that this process goes on long. Not so much that it fundamentally in any way changes the recommendation.
Yeah, we'll get back to you on the number. I just want to make sure that we have it correct for you.
Again, as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. Please stand by for any incoming questions. Our next question comes from Maggie Fox with NBC News. Your line is open.
Thanks, and I apologize if this question's been asked. I got on the call a little bit late. Have you guys done anything to look at the denominator on the number of cases of microcephaly? I know this is hard, and it's really hard to test for Zika, but can you talk about how difficult it is to know how many cases of Zika might be directly associated with microcephaly and how you go about determining if there's a direct cause and effect relationship there and whether there is a true increase in the number of microcephaly cases in Brazil? Thanks.
Right. The only way to figure out exactly what the denominator is to do a serological survey, and which would involve testing hundreds or even thousands of people to look for previous exposure to the virus, and that just hasn't been done yet. It's a very difficult study to do, particularly in areas where dengue is endemic, because the antibody tests for Zika cross-react with dengue. So the types of things that we're doing right now to answer these kinds of questions or questions similar are a couple major studies are planned. One is the Brazilians are doing a study that where they're taking pregnant women and following them forward to look at pregnancy outcome. We are doing a study with the Brazilians coming up in next month to what's called a case control study, where we will look at a sample of women who have been infected and had babies with microcephaly, and then a sample of women who had babies without microcephaly, and look for antecedent risk factors. So there's several studies either planned or ongoing to help answer questions like this.
So I'd like to add a little bit to that. This is Dr. Moore again. The question that I answered earlier about how common this was, or do we know if there is an increase, and I mentioned that it's a very difficult condition to count in a population. In the United States, our estimates of the number of babies born with microcephaly is between 2 and 12 per 10,000. And in the Brazil babies that have been reported so far, we know that they have cast a broad net so they won't miss any babies. But even if only, say, for half of those babies had true microcephaly, it still would be quite a large increase.
Okay. Operator, can you check to see if there are any last questions?
I show no questions in the queue at this time, but again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name. We have questions coming in. One moment.
This is Dr. Peterson. The correct number was 12,
and our
not 14. So.
Not eight.
And our next question comes from Colleen Delavafont with Everyday Health. Your line is open.
Hi, I was just wondering, for women who have traveled to these areas before and maybe were unknowingly affected preconception, is there any concern with that, or is it too early to say?
This is Dr. Moore. What time period are you asking about?
So let's say they traveled to Brazil when within the outbreak period, preconception, they were infected. Is there a concern that if they became pregnant after, that there could be some effects from that?
So perhaps Dr. Peterson could answer that. My understanding is the period of concern would be about 2 weeks after the travel, but please correct me if I'm wrong.
So your question, excuse me, we were trying to reconcile something here, but could you please repeat your question?
So let's say someone traveled to Brazil before they knew they were pregnant. Is there any possibility at any period after that point that it could be a concern, microcephaly could be a concern?
Well, again, we don't know exactly at what period is the major period of concern, but what I can tell you is that the virus will generally stay at least in the blood of a person who's been infected for less than a week. Now, whether the period of concern, would be rather short, within a week or two, when the person actively has virus in their blood.
Great, thank you. Very helpful.
Yes, and to clarify the numbers issue again, from 2007 to 2014, we identified 14 individuals with Zika virus infection among travelers. From 2015 to 2016, we identified 12 so far.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson, and thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. We'll continue to post and share information with you as we have it. We will post a transcript on our CDC Newsroom website. It probably will be sometime tomorrow. Thank you again.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please stand by for post-conference.